want to start today by talking about Henry David Thoreau, one of our great Unitarian spiritual ancestors, who stepped out of his comfort zone when he spent 2 years living in a cabin on the shores of Walden Pond. He left his job in his dad's pencil factory, as well as the comfort of his living in his parents' busy home, for a more quiet and Spartan existence, living solo in a 10-foot by 15-foot cabin. It's important to acknowledge that his sojourn to Walden Pond was not exactly a wild adventure on the rugged frontier. The cabin actually was just 500 yards from a train station. But, you know, so he really wasn't retreating from society, and he had, as was always true in his life, a very fine safety net available to him if things didn't quite work out. Nonetheless, in the scheme of his life, his time on Walden was really a notable departure from his comfort zone. His aim was to live as simply and deliberately as possible. He would live in a cabin he built out of trees from the land there on his own with a little help from his friends. He would eat beans that he grew. An ardent abolitionist, he was looking for some sort of analogy to the literal emancipation of a slave. And this was the best he could do. And he was also looking to liberate himself from the tyranny of capitalism. Thoreau saw his move to Walden as a new beginning. The book is full of imagery of awakening, especially the morning time. Only that day dawns to which we are awake. There is more day to dawn. The sun is but a morning star, go the last words of the book. Stepping out of his regular life of living with his parents, working in the pencil factory, it brought him a new dawn. It was truly a moment of great awakening for him, and you really can look at Thoreau's life, and there was before Walden and after Walden. And those 2 years produced not just the book Walden, but also some of his greatest essays. And it was also during that time that he famously refused to pay the poll tax as an act of civil disobedience against war with Mexico. He spent a night in the Concord jail for that crime. And out of that experience, while he was still living on Walden Pond, he wrote the landmark anti-war, anti-slavery essay, Civil Disobedience. And that writing really is arguably his most consequential work, inspiring Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. to their nonviolent resistance movement work. And Thoreau never really intended to live forever on Walden Pond. He viewed his time there as an experiment of limited duration. So after 2 years, he moved back first to Emerson's house and then finally to his parents again. Inquiry is our worship and learning theme this month, and the definition of inquiry is a questioning or query, a close examination of a matter in search of information or truth. Thoreau's experiment on Walden Pond was a form of inquiry. Like a lot of inquiry, it required him, in this case quite literally, to step out of his comfort zone. And it's an enormous understatement to say that his time on Walden Pond had a profound impact on Thoreau, and that the writings that grew out of the experience continue to pack a wallop for a lot of people, including me. The rewards of stepping out of your comfort zone can be extraordinary. I'm not guaranteeing today that you'll write a book that will change world history, or maybe an essay that inspires the next Gandhi or King, but hey, you never know. What I know is that staying firmly anchored in your comfort zone year after year, decade after decade, will exact a cost, including maybe preventing you from writing an all-time great book. Anne Lamott, in the words that Dan shared, captures the cost well. If we stay where we are, where we're stuck, where we're comfortable and safe, we die. When we're doing that, she goes on to say, you're saying, leave me alone. I don't mind this little rat hole. It's warm and dry. Really, it's fine. So I'm really glad that Thoreau decided to step out of that warm rat hole that was his parents' house in the pencil business and instead went for this adventure on Walden Pond. And even though he ended up eventually going back to his parents' house, he was a changed person, and the world is the better for it. What happens when we step outside of our comfort zones? First of all, I think that stepping out unleashes enormous possibilities for learning. Our comfort zones typically are places where there is little or no learning because we've kind of already learned the lessons there. When we can step out, a whole new world of learnings opens up. A second result of stepping outside our comfort zones is the unleashing, potentially, of creativity. Our creative juices can just dry up when we are safely ensconced in our comfort zone. The muses of creativity simply don't come anymore. So, you step out, and maybe those juices start flowing. That's what happened for Thoreau. And those juices for him kept on flowing even after his experiment was concluded. And a third thing that happens is, for me, the most important. It's an enhanced opportunity when you step out of your comfort zone to experience who you are at the very deepest level. Stepping outside our comfort zones can bring a clearer understanding of ourselves and kind of what we're called to do in life. It's a little counterintuitive because stepping into a new and uncomfortable place often can be very disorienting, yet in that very disorientation, we may find truths about ourselves and what we're meant to do. A story might help here, and it's a story I've shared a few times here over the years. It was the furthest venture I have made outside of my comfort zone. It came during the final 3 weeks of a semester abroad in Sri Lanka, little island nation off the southeast coast of India. Each of the 15 students in our program spent the last 3 weeks there traveling somewhere alone and studying something. I wanted to study Hindu rites of passage up close, and I shared this desire with the lead professor of my program with a little bit of trepidation because I knew that the logical place to go do this was the northern part of the island, and there were a few problems with going there. The first was that we had spent those months learning the language Sinhala, and that's the language of the Buddhist majority. It's a pretty easy language for English speakers because ultimately it's related to the Indo-European language family, like English. But no one in the northern section where I wanted to go would speak Sinhala. They would speak the far more difficult Tamil language, which I only knew a word or two of. The second problem was even a little more daunting, and that was that there was a civil war going on and between the Sinhalese and the Tamils, and the main fighting was in the north. That's why my whole student group didn't go there. Now, it's true that neither side at the time was particularly anti-American, and the fighting was in a bit of a lull at the moment. The Tamil rebels were trying to rob banks and stuff like that to get money to buy arms for future fighting. But, you know, honestly, I'd never lived in a war zone of any intensity, so even though it was kind of low-level intensity, it scared me. I was going to be very far from my metaphorical pencil factory and parental nest. Well, my professor told me, I think it'd be okay, so I went for it. And I can't help but thinking, like, 30 years later this year, that there's no way that would happen today, as we've become ever more concerned about safety and litigation. So the professor traveled with me a ways on a bus, and then when I had about 3 hours to go, I transferred buses and said farewell. And it wasn't long before we passed a truckload of soldiers, and they all stared at me because there were not many white people in the war part of the island, and as they stared, they pointed their guns, too, because that's what you do when you look at someone, I guess. So I knew I was in for something. And then I arrived in the capital city of the northern part after dark, And I didn't know the language, and I didn't know anyone, and I was really lucky to find a guest house near the bus station that the war had not yet closed down. So the next morning, I looked up the one contact I had, which was the name of a professor at the university. And I managed to locate him, even though the university had been closed by the war. And he launched me on a chain of talking to different people that ultimately led me to a refugee camp next door to a Hindu temple. And I lived in that refugee camp for 3 weeks, sleeping on a straw bed, bathing in a pool as everybody stared, and using a toilet that was basically a hole in the ground. I was not in Kansas or Michigan or Maine, really, anymore. And those 3 weeks were the scariest weeks of my life, but also maybe the most remarkable. I learned a lot about Hindu rites of passage. I also learned a lot about myself. And one of the most significant things I learned, or began to learn, was that I wanted to be a minister. Prior to that experience, I had really been zeroing in on teaching about religion, being a professor of comparative religions. That's what drew me to Sri Lanka and studying Hindu rites of passage. But while I was on that independent study, I came to appreciate the everyday power of religion in the lives of the people I was studying in this really difficult situation. And I began to think, maybe I want to do religion rather than study religion. Then one day, I stopped to talk to the priest as I was leaving the refugee camp. And through my translator, he told me that he sensed within me the call to being a priest. A seed of becoming a Unitarian Universalist minister was cast that day. And here I am. And I was really far out of my comfort zone. So what prevents us from stepping out of our comfort zones? I think the word is, one word, is fear. The Sri Lankan case is a little bit extreme because I actually had some reason to be afraid for my life. But most of the time, the fear we face is much less dramatic, but not really less potent. We are afraid of failure. We're afraid of not mastering something new. And maybe most of all, we're afraid of looking foolish. And I think that may be the mortal fear of most of us. One of the most terrifying comfort zone departures I have in my rather near future is the father-daughter dance at my daughter's wedding, which is absolutely terrifying. And what terrifies me about that? Looking foolish in front of a whole lot of friends and family. And the truth is that any time we step out and enter new territory, the chances of failure really undoubtedly go up. And it takes spiritual fortitude to quiet those voices enough so that we can step out. I was talking this week with a fellowship member, Dave Roysom, who's a master gardener. And he keeps venturing into new gardening territory, including really being in charge of a couple acres here. And with that comes new possibilities, new opportunities to kill plants. And he told me that he kept a catalog of all the plants he's killed. And he discontinued the catalog after the species that he killed exceeded 1,000. So he made it his spiritual task for a long time not to let the failure that inherently comes with a new form of gardening keep him locked into, you know, I'm just going to have a little square foot of garden, and it's going to be the only stuff I know that really works well. Instead, that catalog actually allowed him to step out and keep trying new things. He stopped doing it because he kind of had internalized the message. So is it always good to step outside your comfort zone? No. Sometimes it's just stupid. By trying to hike across the Grand Canyon in a single day last June when it was really hot is an example. Sure, that was way outside my comfort zone, and it was stupid. As many of you know, I suffered from heat exhaustion and found myself and my hiking partner in a very dicey situation. Now, the original plan had been to do the single-day hike in October. I think that was stepping out of the comfort zone in a smart way. June, just dumb. So it takes some discernment to decide when and how to step out of the comfort zone. And I also want to lift up that I believe there is a way to keep open and growing and learning even when we stay in the same situation, say the same job, or living in the same community, or being in the same marriage. Those resonate with me because here I am, year 22 plus of this job and year 25 of the marriage, and I've lived in Appleton these 22 years. And I think it's possible to stay open and to see things differently, even in the same place. It makes me think of the writer Annie Dillard, who lived in and explored her own personal Walden for many, many years. What kept life fresh for her and not stuck is that each day she looked at the place with new eyes. Anywhere we are is really always changing if we have the eyes to see it. So the secret of life is not necessarily jumping from one thing to the next, but sometimes you can actually get out of your comfort zone even as you stay put. I think part of the success of this fellowship is that we have, with some frequency, collectively stepped outside our comfort zone. Maybe it's in our DNA going back to that group of people starting a liberal anything, in this case a liberal religious congregation, in Joe McCarthy's Appleton in 1955. That certainly was a step outside the comfort zone. And then I think about the 1970s, when the fellowship in many ways had become a kind of comfortable little club for a handful of chosen people. Several members then looked around and said, "This isn't good enough. We can be more than this. We can impact more lives in our community more forcefully." So they successfully dislodged the fellowship from the comfort zone it had been in and triggered the path that leads to us today being a large and vibrant congregation. I'm often asked, why is this fellowship in a really unlikely location for Unitarian Universalism in the top 25 congregations by size in our association? Maybe in large part it's because we have stepped outside the comfort zone with some frequency. And in my experience, that's a really rare thing in religious community. They often tend to calcify and lift up sameness as the ultimate good. Over the years, the fellowship has decided again and again to step outside the comfort zone, buying the old Moose Lodge, calling ministers, adding services, building this place, and very soon, I hope, building an addition. And I want to say, and I'm going to say this again over the next several months, that moving into a new sanctuary is really going to feel like we're stepping out of our comfort zone. This is really beautiful, warm, cozy space with a lot of fabulous memories. When we go over there, it's going to feel different. It's going to be bigger, and it's going to feel bigger. Our design committee is working really hard with our architect to create wonderful, amazing space, and I'm really excited about what they're doing. But still, I want to say, I think a lot of us are going to miss worshiping together in this space. So why are we doing it? We're doing it because it creates more space for people so they feel welcome. Recently at our 10:45 service, we had a first-time visitor who had to sit on the floor during the service. That's not very welcoming. And what will happen if the new space does feel more welcoming and more people come? We'll have new folks, new insights, new questions and ideas that they bring with them. This place of inquiry will get that much more diverse and interesting and provocative. All of us, then, can keep on growing and learning spiritually. And for me, that's plenty of reason to step outside of this particular comfort zone. And I've been thinking lately, okay, after that, what might the next big step outside the comfort zone be for our fellowship? I've been thinking, maybe it's joining other UU congregations in the Fox Valley and maybe a little bit beyond. I've been picturing what it might be like to join with congregations in Green Bay and Fond du Lac and have a regular weekly service in Oshkosh as well as here. So I picture a live service in religious education classes in all of these places every Sunday and Saturday here too. I picture one congregation, one staff, one board, one governance system, but with these multiple sites. I picture vigorous local engagement in each of these sites because we know Fond du Lac's different from Oshkosh, which is different from Appleton, which is different from Green Bay. I see a congregation that would instantly be larger by 150 people and quickly grow, I think, that would therefore be able to add staff. So, for example, while our director of religious education would run a program in four sites, which is hard, she also might have a paid assistant who could help her do that work. I think this concept would be an amazing way to pool our resources and synergy and make Unitarian Universalism much stronger in north central and northeast Wisconsin. So the leadership of these congregations, including our own, have begun to talk about this concept. Who knows if it will happen? Who knows if it would be like Thoreau moving to Walden or me trying to cross the Grand Canyon in June? That's what we have to figure out. Good idea, dumb idea. I'm excited to think about it. So I want to leave you today with a personal question and perhaps a challenge. And the question is, when was the last time you feel like you stepped outside your comfort zone? And if it's been a while, I gently challenge you to find a way to step out. And it doesn't have to be huge or earth-shaking. It could be as simple as walking into the health food store to get some blackberries instead of into 7-Eleven to get a Hershey bar. Our journey groups this month have some amazing spiritual exercises to do this. And one of them is to do something that is not you. So the packet that we give our journey group folks has examples. Hate guns? Go to a shooting range. Scared of heights? Sign up for bungee jumping. Convinced all Republicans are selfish and cold-hearted? Take your Republican neighbors out to lunch and ask them what breaks their hearts. Are you serious by nature? Spend an evening at a comedy club. Or ask someone's help in playing a practical joke on a friend. Do you most often keep your views to yourself? Write a letter to the editor. The guiding principle for this is to choose an experience that makes all of your friends look at you and say, "I can't believe you did that." Try it. It might change your life.